So I want to first thank the organizers for inviting me. Then I also want to thank Simon Prebst, who is actually the first author on the paper that he allows me to give the talk here. It's nice of him, thank you. And I also want to thank Subir and Sentil for mentioning my Carlo, you have the results, so that I don't have to talk about that topic anymore here. So what the topic will be is, so we heard already in Nadine's talk about the Hubbard model and fermions, and how for the repulsive view that is hard to simulate and that we can't get far. So what the focus here will be is not to try to simulate the model on a classically computer, but to talk about how the cold atoms can help us to understand the phases of the fermionic Hubbard model. And the main problem will be that the energy scales are extremely low. And I want to show here that that problem can be overcome by an adiabatic quantum simulation, and that it's fully feasible to actually learn something about the ground states, although the energy scales are very low. So Nadine was nice and mentioned already the high TCC problem triggered by the discovery in 1986 by Betnotz and Müller. That's now 20 years past. And although in the next year already there was the RVP theory by Anderson, we are still not close to solving the problem, because on the side of the experiments, it's hard to get some clean samples, it's hard to do a good experiments, and on the theoretical side, because it's a strongly interacting system, it's hard to solve it exactly, and because it's fermions and repulsive interactions, we can't actually simulate it accurately. While bosons, we can do millions of bosons without any problem. For fermions, with the repulsive interaction, that's a problem. And so the fact is that we still don't understand the details of this problem yet. Quantum simulation with fermions could help. There, at least the system is pretty clean. We know the model. So simulating fermions in an optical lattice could help. For the attractive case that was discussed by Hofstadter and co-workers, that's a problem actually which we can solve for also numerically. We find a superfluid and it's all quite well understood. The problem is the repulsive case, where the questions one might want to find an answer to are, for example, is the ground state superfluid or superconducting for the electron? Or a more specific question, is the ground state an RVP state? So is the theory of Anderson correct or not? And can the Hubbard model explain something about high TC or not? So where do we stand? In the group of Esslinger, fermions were loaded into the optical lattices 2 years ago. They saw the fermion surfaces beautifully, so things can be done. One sees something about fermions, interacting fermions, so it seems feasible. But let's first look at the temperature scales. And since we don't know actually what the ground state of the Hubbard model is, we want to take some guidance from the experiments and from simulations of 1D systems, where we have some results. And for that, I pick out my logarithmic thermometer in units of the Fermi energy, 1/10, 100, and 1,000. So it's a logarithmic scale. And the hoppings that are of order of the Fermi energy, then the magnetic fluctuations set in the coup range around so 1500 Kelvin. That's roughly 0.1 of the Fermi energy. The largest pairing gap we found in any model, I'll come to that later, also will be about 1/100 of the Fermi energy. And the largest TC in a single layer compound in the coup range is roughly around 50 Kelvin or so for the single layer material, so that corresponds to about 0.002 E Fermi. Now these are low temperatures, especially when we compare to what can be reached. In Esslinger's group in September of 05, they were at about half of E Fermi in a lattice. Now they are at about 1/3. The MIT group is lower a bit, but we don't know exactly where they are. But no matter where we are now, there's still a long way to cool, and it's a factor of 100 to go. And even if one can go down by a factor of 2 every 2 years, it will still take a decade or more to reach that. So can we do something better than that? And the answer is we can try to do an adiabatic quantum simulation that is motivated by the adiabatic the quantum computing idea of Fahy et al. But the idea is you start from a simple state that you can prepare well, a pure state that you know how to prepare, and then you find a path that allows you to adiabatically transform that pure state into the result of a hard computation. So the idea for the adiabatic quantum simulation will be also to start from a pure initial state of a non-interacting model that we can prepare in some way. So that's a state that should be then pure, so it has zero entropy optimally. And then we want to start from that state and we want to adiabatically change it to the unknown ground state of a strongly interacting model like the fermionic Hubbard model. And the key is to find a way how to do that, and we want to keep always large gaps to the excited state so that we can move fast and get there before the states decohere. So the state that looks like so, and as the example, I want to use the P states in the Hubbard model that were mentioned already by Nandini in the talk before mine. So what are these RBP states? These are resonating valence bond states. It's singlet pairs that fluctuate around that form a liquid of such singlets. And the idea of Anderson was that if you take such a liquid state of singlet and if you dope it, if these singlet pairs are replaced by hole pairs, then you find a superconductor. And he thought that is what could explain high TC. The problem was at that time when he first proposed it, one still did not know what the ground state of the undoped system was, and so the idea was it could be such a spin liquid. In the meantime, we know it's a nailed state and it's not such an RBP liquid, but the doped system could very well still be an RBP liquid. One more thing, why do you call it D-wave in the title? Anderson first thought that it's an S-wave state, like in standard PCS, but soon there were some proposals for a D-wave symmetry, and that was then seen in the experiments by Tsui and al quite nicely, where they could wrap a half vortex, a half of the flux quantum on the tricrystal boundary, and that was a clear indication then for D-wave symmetry. What do these states look like? And the simplest is again to look at four sides at a simple plaquette. On a simple plaquette, a D-wave pair is just a pair of two fermions in a singlet state. When you rotate it by 90 degrees, then you get a minus sign. Now it's a bit tricky because the state of four fermions on a plaquette is at your momentum zero, but these are two pairs here, and when you now want to remove a pair, then the pair which you remove in going from the four atom sector to the two atom sector on the plaquette, that pair has a D-wave symmetry. So the whole pair you put in has D-wave symmetry. Now, this is the ground state of the fermionic Hubbard model on a plaquette. We know that exactly. We can calculate the spectrum and all, and we see that there are these E wave RVP states. So we know the ground state of that model. Now we can start to couple it weakly. If the plaquettes are uncoupled, then we know we have this RVP state. When we couple it weakly, the state will remain because we have a gap. And so the question is, does the RVP state survive the coupling of plaquettes to the uniform limit of the isotropic square lattice, or is there a phase transition before we reach the square lattice? Similarly, we can go to Hubbard ladders, which are two chain systems. They were studied extensively starting 15 years ago. And then in my thesis, I worked on them, and there's been lots of work on those ladders for about a decade. And also there, one knows now that the ground state of these ladders is a D-wave RVP state. So here we have pairing in the Hubbard model. We have a D-wave RVP superconducting ground state for these ladders. And again, one can ask the question, but so far there's no answer yet. The question was asked at least twice. What happens when you couple the ladders? When you couple the ladders weakly, because the RVP states on the ladder have a gap, the state will survive. And so upon weak coupling of such ladders, we will still have a D-wave RVP state. But the question is, what happens when we reach the square lattice? And so that's the basic question. Here, as a phase diagram for the coupling of the plaquettes, or the coupling of the ladders versus the doping, we know that in the undoped case, the RVP state vanishes when the coupling is about one half, and then we go into an NAL phase. But now, how does the phase transition line between the mother state, like the NAL state, and the RVP state look like in the doped case? If the phase transition line goes up here, then here where we have the cuprates at some doping and that isotropic coupling, then that could very well be in the RVP phase. Or it could also be that the phase transition line bends down and we get some other unknown ground state phase of the fermionic Hubbard model. Yes. Yes. Yes, that will. Yes, I wanted to skip the detail here, but I'm aware of that. So the nodal lines, that the gap will close at some point. But the question is, will it remain an RVP state otherwise?
Okay.
Yes.
This neon state can be thought as
I think you can express any state in such a phase with an infinitely long one. Down here we have it a fully gapped RVP phase, completely short range. Up here the NAL phase could be expressed as a long range one. I call it only the short range one. Then we have in the cuprates, we know we have that at the nodal lines, as Subi mentioned, the gap closes. So we have some kind of marginal short range RVP state there. And now the question is, can we take this state down here, where we know that it's this nice short-range RVP state, is that adiabatically connected to the ground state of the cuprates? Yes. What breaks? So what's the... Yes. Would you call the spin ladder a pile state? But the single ladder has no further broken symmetry in the ladder. And in that, we have an RVP state. Well, yes, that's the way how we can construct a system which has this phase. Well, that depends on what you call an RVB state. Yes? It has short range spin correlations in the doped case. Then? We have mobile pairs in the system. That comes down to what you call an RVB state. You require to have fractionalization or not, and that depends on whom you talk to. Yes? It
I think this is a very nice discussion, but we should probably let Matthias tell us what he has to tell us, and maybe we can continue this discussion at the end.
So, as you see, there's been lots of your discussion about what these states are, whether it's a valence bond solid or RVB states, but let's just say we want to study that because that will give us information then about what happens in the fermionic Hubbard model, no matter how exactly you want to call it. So the idea now is that we want to start from a Fermi gas that we cool as much as possible. Then we want to prepare an initial state, a pure state in an optic lattice that we can prepare purely, then we want to tune it adiabatically to the model we want to study, and we want to know that we can check what we're doing, and so we want to have some checkpoints in between where we know what should happen. While doing that, we want to move as fast as possible, so we want to keep large gaps in the system, and we want to avoid getting in the wrong state. So we have to watch out that we don't create an excited state of the system. What we will need for that is, next to optic lattices, technique by Peter Tzoller's group called pattern loading, because just cooling it is probably not enough. We can't get that low. But the idea is that given some Fermi gas, you can now pump atoms into an optic lattice in a regular pattern by, for example, you're pumping it here up to the second year level of a local lattice state, then by collision it can go down to the ground state. And so you then, by pumping more and more, you fill the lattice, and then once the lowest level is fully filled, you throw out all the higher bands, and then you are left with just a pure band insulator, a pure state where the lowest band is filled. So that seems feasible to create, and once that is done, now we want to change that over to the ground state of some interacting fermionic system. And what we need for that are we need a lattice, we need a super lattice. We've heard about here, so the super lattice is already in the talk by Immanuel Bloch. We'll hear more, I think, in the talk by Trey Porter later on. Then we'll need some ramps in the lattice, and that's also feasible. So, and how can we now convert this band insulator we started from into the interesting state we want to get to? here I have a sketch of the lattice, and first we want to get from the fully band, from the full band filling, we want to get to a state close to half filling. So we have to double our number of lattice sites, and the way one can do that is by first fill only every other line of the lattice, by starting with the, sort of the super lattice. Then if we have some light sheets here, which sort of cut off the lattice after three lattice layers, then we could have one plaquette filled with four atoms and one filled with two atoms, and so we can make some RVB states with four or with two atoms on a plaquette. Now from that we want to go to the state close to half filling, so we want to change our lattice that we have here, two lattice wells, and also here four, so that then here we get a plaquette with four fermions, and here one with two fermions, and so make an RVB state with four or with two fermions on a plaquette. And the question is, how fast and how can one do that? And so which path should one take? And there is a path. One first has to increase the hopping between the sites. Then one has to move out the walls, so to decrease the chemical potential on the other side. And then one has to lower down the second chain. If one follows that route, then the spectrum stays nicely gapped everywhere. One can go fast, and there's no problem. If one does it in the wrong order, one might get an S-wave state out. So here, the order in which one changes the lattice is so quite important. And once one has done that in about a time that's about 50 times the hopping time scale, so about 50 milliseconds, one can drive the system actually to an RVB state on a plaquette. How does the spectrum of such a plaquette look like, and what is the binding energy of two particles here? So let's look at two plaquettes. Like here, there's one with four atoms, one with two. We can ask what happens when we couple such plaquettes, and then we remove the coupling again. Do the two holes here stay bound on the plaquette or not? And that quantity is given by the binding energy, which is the difference of the cost of having four atoms here and two here minus having three here and three here. And here one finds that although the bare scales, the U and T are very large, the binding energy for two holes on these plaquettes is very small. It's only about 0.04 times the hopping matrix element at most. So that's the maximum we can get. So it's about 0.01 times the Fermi energy. And that's an extremely low scale. So unless we are at temperatures below the scale, we will just not see this pairing. So that's why once we are at the stage we are using a diabetic simulation, one could, for example, build these plaquettes. A good test would be to check whether there's really pairing here. And that can be done by just coupling the plaquettes, decoupling them again, and seeing if the two holes stay bound. And here's a simulation of what one should see. If we decouple the plaquettes again after coupling them, then if our repulsion U is larger than 4.5, if we look back, if it's larger than 4.5, then the pairing energy is positive here. So there's no pairing. So if U is then larger than 4.5, then what one will see that as one drives the plaquettes apart again, there will usually be three atoms on a plaquette. While if the interaction U is less than 4.5 times the hopping, then there's pairing, and so then there should be four atoms on one the plaquette and here two on the other. And then by counting the number of atoms, or by counting the number of unpaired atoms, or by forming up the molecules and counting the number of molecules, one can then check whether one is in the phase where they are unbound and we have three and three usually, or where they're bound and we end up with four and two. So that's a simple test one can then do in a time scale of about half a second. Why is the time scale now so much longer than the time scales before? The reason for that is when we start and we couple the plaquettes, then we slowly decouple them, and what we find that at the end, when we approach the point where they're decoupled, we again see this sort of binding energy, which is very small. So that's why we have to move very slowly at that end. So in such an adiabatic simulation, the creation of the plaquettes would take about 50 milliseconds. Coupling plaquettes to two plaquettes, the time scale made it slightly long, about 100 milliseconds. Making ladders, long one, the ladders would take about 250 milliseconds, a quarter second, so it's still fast. So these things are doable in time scales that are realistic for the system, although the energy scales are so small. And then the question that I propose would be to see what happens in the case where we don't know what happens, namely when we take those ladders and couple them. Let's see. So does the state change? Qualitatively, is there a new phase appearing? When does the gap close? So when does the nodal gap close, at least, is one question one can ask. Does the gap go away completely? And that way, one can now reach this unknown point of the interesting phase diagram of the fermionic Hubbard model. Once we're there, we'd like to measure, for example, the D-wave pairing already on the ladders. One way to do that is when we look at a plaquette like this, using the Raman process, one could think of a way to turn a D-wave pair of atoms on a plaquette into a D-wave molecule in the center, and then see whether these molecules are coherent. So one could measure the D-wave pairing and thus learn something about the fermionic Hubbard model. So to summarize, I think I'm on time. We propose that using an adiabatic quantum simulation, one can often reach states which would be unreachable just by cooling. But by starting from a pure state that we can prepare well, and with a high fidelity, we can then transform it adiabatically into the unknown ground state of an interacting model. We've shown that can be done in quite short times. The example were the RVB states in the Hubbard model, where the gaps are very low, to 0.1 of the Fermi energy. Cooling there is very hard. But we are using that way one can reach the ground states in short time. Then one can test how the state looks like, and I think no matter what we see, then it will be very interesting, no matter what the answer will be and no matter how we call the states in the end. I think that's what we all agree upon, that that would be worth doing, and it seems all feasible. When we talked to people last year, it was mostly super lattices and this and that, and nobody was really convinced, and so I liked it that this year in Immanuel Bloch's talk, he ended it with the sentence that this all should now be doable. So I hope we see some results in the next years. Thank you.
We have time for a few questions.
This one.
Before? Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I mean, you were saying that that it, will the state be different as we go from the ladder, coupled ladder, to the uniform case? Well, how will you know? I mean, there is, what is the difference? I mean, they are exactly the same states. We already know that, except for the existence of modal quantum part.
Do we know that? That's the question. I believe so, yes. I mean,
the wave function overlaps will be, may not be that great, but in what sense are the states different? Is there some characterization you have in mind?
Is there a first order phase transition between here at which we would see some heating? Do we find some new states? So yes, there are people like you, I think, that agree, or like Nandine at least, that agree that they are connected, that they are similar. But there,
okay, if there aren't, then what is the possible, what is the alternative? I mean, is there some theoretical basis for an alternative?
Oh, there are many people who don't believe in RVP states or
we're not talking about the real world. We're not talking about the real world. We're comparing two wave functions. That's all. We're comparing the trial wave function and your trial wave. Why are they different?
No.
Well, I already mentioned that, apart from that.
Yes. There's D wave pairing in the ladders, and then we go to the square lattice.
No.
Do we have D wave pairing in the Hubbard model, in the doped Hubbard model, on the square lattice? Do you have the answer to that?
Starting the wave function to go towards that direction.
Okay. Yes, we have wave. Okay.
Okay. Do we have any more questions, comments? Oh.
You were talking about holes and pairing of holes.
Yes.
So I was a bit confused about that, because I have always thought about the pairing happening between, you know, those singlet bonds, and those are my Cooper pairs, and then the holes just, you know, sort of move around and so on. But there's really no pairing between the holes per se, so I was just a bit confused about that.
That's something we learned already in the 1D chains, for example, that where we looked at models way back, where we had a strong pairing, strong local singlet pairs, but still we had no superconducting correlations.
Yeah, but
because
that's because...
If you take a pair here and you want to move it elsewhere, you need to have a place to put that
sure.
pair.
Sure, no, that I understand, but really the pairing is between the fermions. And
we need both. We need.
Yeah, I'm not... Okay. I'm not sure if you looked at hole-hole correlations, there was any such structure of pairing. The D-wave pairing is really in the background.
The D-wave pairing are the two particles you remove. You start from the plaquette, the half-filled one, or the system, and you remove a D-wave pair of fermions and you place it somewhere else.
Okay,
so it's pairing of these atoms, but there's still binding of the holes that we see here on the plaquettes.
I think that answers the question. We had another question here.
I have a question for both of you, Matthias and Nadine. I was wondering the energy scale you showed for the critical temperature for entering kind of the superconducting phase was like on the order of 0.1 of the exchange, in your talk, and I think you mentioned similar results.
I had it lower than that, yes.
Okay, it was maybe even lower. Yeah. So what influences, so I guess it's always times the exchange, but what influences that prefactor?
Okay, so...
Do we know that, or is that unknown? That's an unknown. Okay, so it's... something about that. Yeah.
Well, okay, so the scale is set by J, as you said, and then there's a prefactor. You know, so what I got was that parameter that I got at x equal to 0 was 1. J is a scale which is about 100 millivolts. That's about 1,000 Kelvin.
No, just in terms of this prefactor, what is this if I want to drive this
numerical
prefactor, what determines this prefactor?
The prefactor can be as... prefactor is about a tenth, and it has something to do with... details of how the whole...
Exactly. So what details can we change to drive that parameter up?
So basically, when you make a hole, that excitation doesn't remain localized, but kind of extends over some region, and that determines the energy, that determines the prefactor.
Yes. Plus what we know from the couplet is that if you have more layers coupled, then it goes up. So for the three layers coupled, it's about that. So a tenth, for single layer, it's about a twentieth or less. So okay. The double layer might increase it.
Okay, let us go to another question, Mike.
I was rather impressed by the adiabatic evolution. Did you find that by trial and error? Because in a computer science sense, no one really knows how to choose the path without closing the gap.
We knew that from physics intuition at first, how that we should make a plaquette first and then a lattice, because there we knew the ground states already. And then finding the right way, for example, from the band insulator to the plaquette, that's what Simon did by trial and error, and that took a couple of days to scan all the routes and find it. Here the advantage is there aren't so many routes because we have three coupling parameters that we need to vary, and for this small finite problem it's possible to find it. But in the general case, you know, that is really the hard problem, and I think that's in general an NP-hard problem for a general.
But as far as I know, this might be the most interesting example of a one-parameter family.
Yes, yeah. So it's doable, and if it's done, then we'll get some interesting result out.
So just from an experimentalist point of view, to understand what this proposal is, it's basically a many-body adiabatic cooling process. So you start with a many-body gap that's big, and you can cool relative to that energy scale, and then you just move it down, and it's just like nuclear demagnetization, except it's a many-body gap and not just like a single particle spin that you're extracting the energy. Because the entropy will be fixed beginning to end.
We have to start with a state that has entropy zero. And that's the basic idea. And once we have that state...
Or from an experimental point of view, low entropy epsilon.
Epsilon, yes. Low entropy, as low as possible. And you should go to the system where you can do that as good as possible. And then that state we should now transform adiabatically to the desired state, and that way we can cool it adiabatically.
Was there another question? If not, that we can conclude this part. We reconvene here at 10 minutes past 4 in about half an hour, and let us thank the speaker again, please.